Welcome to Ask the Coach, a series of exclusive conversations with the most successful strength coach in the world, Coach Charles Poliquin. This is Poliquin Podcast number 2, Lean Muscle Mass. Now, here is Charles in conversation with John Connor.
Hi, my name is John Connor, and today we're going to learn nutritional strategies for gaining lean muscle mass with world-renowned strength coach, Charles Poliquin.
Charles, welcome.
Thank you.
Someone has come to you looking to put on size. Where would you start?
Well, actually, it's the same way you would do it with someone who comes for a fat loss. Obviously, the goal is different, but the measurement tools are the same. So I would run a biosignature profile, and then based on that, I would know how much person has fat mass, lean body mass, and his or her hormonal profile, which would help me decide which supplements I would give that person. Anthropometric measurements are also very important for someone who wants to gain hypertrophy, because you want to be able to say, well, this is your potential. Another very important thing for also the fat loss market is to take pictures, because if people know what they really look like versus the mirror, it's easier for them to set goals towards building muscle mass. And for example, especially when you deal with someone who's trained for a while, not necessarily properly, but they may have trained for 5 years and they finally can afford your services and they come to see you. If you take measurements, then they may realize, for example, that they need to do forearm training, they need to do calf training, because those muscles have never been exploited and they're a source of weight gain potential.
Would there be much difference in taking a picture of someone and what they see of themselves in the mirror?
Oh, tremendous. Also, for example, body fat. People will say, I'm at 8% body fat. And when you do their body fat, it's like 22. I remember being at a professional hockey camp, and I was measuring some body fats, and some athletes that were not training asked me to do their body fat. And I remember one guy was an enforcer in hockey, and his body fat was in the double digits. I mean, this bathtub had stretch marks. He was so fat. And he was telling me he was 6% body fat. And I said, no, it's like more like 26. And yes, people's perception and reality are two different things. So I think it's really good that you do that testing, because then you have a goal. And when they change, you can see the change or no change, because sometimes if they don't commit to the program, or sometimes that approach may not work for them, but at least you know that approach doesn't work and you can move on to another approach.
And is it good to have that baseline of measurements?
Always.
That sometimes people will come to say, well, I'm not making progress, but when they actually are.
Yeah, or some people, what they think progress should be and what it is are two different things. You know, people say, well, I didn't put any weight on. You do the calculation, they've put on 15 pounds of muscle, but in their delusional world, they thought they were going to gain 50 pounds of muscle in 1 month. Well, that's not going to happen.
A lot of people say nutrition is 80% involved in bodybuilding. Like people like Vince Guaranda say it's 85%. What percentage would you apply to nutrition?
Well, it depends where they get the number 80% from. You eat four times more than you train, that's for sure. So maybe that's where they get it from. Genetics is 50% of the battle. So if you've chosen the right parents, it's easy to put muscle on. But what they need to do, I would say that more often than enough, it is the limiting factor. In other words, people train properly and they don't eat properly. What I have found is that there are more people who eat improperly for muscle mass gains than there are people who train improperly for them.
What would you say is the number one reason, Pete, like you're saying, they don't eat right? What would be the biggest mistake they made in their eating patterns?
There's a lot of people who call themselves hard gainers. And what I found with hard gainers is they don't really eat. You know, they perceive they eat a lot, but it's not. So not eating enough nutrients is probably the biggest culprit. Also, one of the things I see, particularly with teenagers, is they follow too much a liquid diet. They're just too lazy to cook food, and they, you know, have maybe 4 or 5 shakes a day. That's never going to put weight on. You need solid food to put muscle on.
For what reason?
I think that it has to do with rate of emptying of the GI tract of nutrients. And as far as weight gain is concerned, I'm not exactly sure of the reason, but ask any one of my colleagues who've had success with weight gaining principle, you need to eat solid food to be solid.
What would be the first thing you would introduce? You said, okay, you would look at their dietary protocol, make sure they're eating real food. Is there any particular food you'd get them to concentrate on?
With most underweight individuals, what you will find is that their breakfast is too poor in nutrients. I always give them a protein goal. So I do a dietary recall, and I measure how much protein they eat. They would need to eat typically 2 grams per pound of body weight of protein. Yet I've got people come into my office and they complain they can't gain weight and they barely eat 1 gram per pound. So you got to get that out of the way. In 90% of cases, that's just plenty to gain muscle mass. Insufficient caloric and food intake at breakfast is another cause. So I teach them to start eating more at breakfast. But a lot of people will complain of poor appetite at breakfast. But the most important thing I've learned in the last few years for people who cannot gain weight or lose fat is actually to have them do an HCL test. Most people nowadays, because of low HCL, cannot digest and assimilate protein efficiently. The main cause of low HCL, which is hydrochloric acid levels in the human body, is actually stress. It's been estimated that we have 100 times more stress than our grandfathers. So we did a study at one of my training centers where we took 160 individuals and we tested their HCL levels, and only 2 at somewhat good levels of HCL. So 158 or 160 had completely inadequate hydrochloric acid.
What type of population was that you tested?
It was varied. It was ranging from athletes to senior citizens. But the point is that it's very underestimated in the athletic population. At a center we had in Phoenix, over 5 years, if we take account, we tested 7 people to 10 people a week. Only 2 turned out to have normal.
A week or for the 5 years?
For the 5 years. So, you know, it's a very common problem. And it's linked to all sorts of ailments. But so what we do, it's a very simple test. I have a product called DigestZyme, which is a standardized product for HCL content. And what we ask the person to do is to eat their protein first in the meal. So let's say if they're having a 12-ounce steak, they eat 6 ounces of the steak, then they take 1 DigestZyme, then they take the other 6 ounces of meat, and then they eat their vegetables and so on. If they are normal, 15 minutes later, they should be bent in 2 like if they drank a glass of napalm. But it never happens. So what we do is the next meal, let's say if they're having 2 chicken breasts, they'll have 1 chicken breast, take 2 DigestZymes now, and eat the other chicken breast and eat their vegetables. And we keep increasing the quantity of DigestZyme by 1 capsule every meal. So it takes 7 meals to figure out if they need DigestZyme or not. And what we find is that most people get up to 7 meals, so 7 capsules, and they feel no burning whatsoever. And the question that patients always ask is, well, what do you mean by burning? Well, I always tell them, you'll know, because it will feel like your stomach is burning, like if you drank gasoline or something.
It won't be a slight thing. They'll really, really
It's not a slight warm stomach. They will feel it. But the problem is, like I said, 158 or 160 people get the 7 capsules and not feel anything. The good news is that by supplying HCL, you will get to start secreting your own HCL. What happens when you get stressed is that you downregulate HCL production. Because you downregulate HCL production, you start absorbing less zinc, for example. Zinc is essential for HCL production. Because you have less zinc, you make less HCL. Because you make less HCL, you absorb less zinc, and it's a downward spiral. So if you take a client and they start taking 7-digestzyme, within a week or so, they'll say, I can feel it now, it burns. And if it burns, we just tell them to drink a glass of water, burning goes away immediately. So then they're told, go back down to 6 capsules. And that may take a week, 2 weeks, a month. And then one day, 6 capsule burns. So they go back down to 5. Most people, within 1 month, can re-regulate HCL production to normal levels. In other words, they'll go from 7 capsules down to 1. But I've seen people where it takes them 2 years before their stomach lining gets to be healthy. And I do have some clients, 2 in particular, who have been on a minimum of 2 capsules for the rest of their life. They just can't get their HCL to go back up. And the main reason is that their stress levels are so high that the only way they'll ever get to have a normal HCL production is to actually quit their jobs, which is very unlikely.
Is there anything else that can, you've said the HCL tablets, is there anything else that stands out as people don't do?
The other thing is just they don't eat regularly. I mean, if you want to lose fat or put on muscle, the rule is the same. You must eat every 2.5 hours, and it has to be solid food. The only time I have liquid meals is the post-workout meal. Providing that the athlete does need to put on muscle weight, they should be lean as far as body fat. I like to use 1 gram of protein for every gram of carbohydrate. And over the years, I've played with all sorts of different carbohydrate combinations, from straight sucrose to potato starch. At the time of recording, I have found that the best way to do it is actually a 50% dextrose, 50% maltodextrin solution. Basically, you want some fast carbs, some slower carbs. And that, in my opinion, so it's a 1-2 dextrose-2 maltodextrin protein ratio. The client should take a total of 1 gram of carbohydrate per pound of body weight. So if you were talking about a 200-pound man that needs to put on body weight, let's say you have a volleyball player and he's 6'4", 200 pounds, he needs to be 240, then you're looking at taking in 50 grams of protein, 200 grams of carbohydrates post-exercise. It has to be in liquid form. The other thing that we do differently for the last 2 years is that we divide that shake in two, and we take half the quantity, so 100 grams of carbs, 25 grams of protein, right after exercise, and wait between half an hour to another hour before we have the other shake. That also has been shown to work better than taking the whole quantity at once, perfectly for gains in lean body mass.
For someone who has restriction on time, would you say just take it all at once straight away?
Yeah, let's say if the guy says, you know, I got to be in classes right away. Well, the difference between 2 small shakes and 1 shake is not that great. The other thing that helps with gaining lean body mass is, you know, if we were looking at budget, is actually post-workout supplements that help with insulin sensitivity. I've developed a product called Insulin Plex that improves insulin sensitivity, but I also like to take in a large dose of stabilized alpha lipoic acid. What's a large dose? 600 milligrams for a 200-pound man. That I found helps people store glycogen better and burn body fat better and put on lean body mass. I also like to use large doses of taurine post-exercise. Between 3 to 6 grams per individual.
Would you take capsules or would you take a powder form of this?
I prefer capsules because these things, once you blend them in, they don't taste that
good. So you just blend everything together?
No, I just take the protein and the carbs. Yes, I do blend in, but all the supplements I just mentioned, like the insulin plex, the alpha lipoic acid, and the taurine, are taken as capsule forms along with the shake.
I've heard you mention before that you like to get your athletes lean before you get them big.
Mm-hmm.
Could you expand on that?
Well, one thing you see in America particularly is, well, you got to gain fat to get big. I think that's completely moronic, because what they call the bulk up period, they'll tell kids, for example, well, you want to gain weight, you know, you got to eat bacon and eat Mars bars and all that stuff. And then basically the kid starts eating a lot of junk. Well, what these morons don't realize is that if you start using candy as a source of, as a weight gaining food, you're going to change insulin sensitivity to insulin resistance. So it's actually going to get harder to feed those muscles post-exercise. So when someone comes to see me and they say, I want to put weight on, and they're fat, like I said, anybody above 8%, in my opinion, is fat. So what I do is I lean them out first, and then I put them on a weight gain product. The other thing is that the thing that helps put on muscle while exercising, regardless if you're fat or lean, and it doesn't matter, is actually branched-chain amino acids while you train. I like to use a product called ICE, which is liquid form, and we use a minimum of 20 grams per workout, but I prefer to use 40 to 50 grams. I find that the weight gain is far greater. And there are plenty of reasons why you need to do that, but they go beyond the scope of this taping. But the point is that during workouts is a very important as far as supplementation.
40 to 50 grams, why not less?
I have found that lower dosages of BCAAs to be ineffective, and the threshold being 20 grams, but the results that most people really want are in a 40 to 50 grams of BCAAs during training.
So if you're going to spend the money, you might as well go to the 40, 50 grams, because the results you get at a lower dosage aren't really worth doing.
Yeah, in other words, if you're going to take 5 grams per workout for 6 months, it's not going to do much. Save your money for 6 months, then do 2 months of 50 grams per workout, it'll be worth it.
So that can, as you said, that can tie over for, regardless of whether you're fat boy or you're lean and want to get bigger, the BCAAs will work both ways.
Yes, it'll work both ways for increasing lean body mass.
Same dosage?
Same dosage, yes.
For someone who, say, comes to you, a lot of the athletes you get an off-season and they have to gain weight fast. Do you have any particular methods of gaining weight really quickly?
Well, you can only gain as what the training could provide. So if someone came, let's say, for a movie and they're non-athletic and they've got to do a shower scene or they've got to be an action hero or whatever and they need to put muscle on, then the only way you can gain fast is if you train more. I'm talking you're training 3 times a day. That means you'll have 3 times a day you'll have branched-chain amino acids and 3 times a day you'll have post-workout shakes. But it is possible to grow training 3 times a day, but it means that you're fully dedicated to that task. If you're a movie actor, that's great because you're getting paid to gain the weight. But for most people, you can't. The most I've seen people gain muscle mass is 30 pounds in 1 month. That's because they were completely untrained, had great genetics, and we're basically robots as far as following the diet. But typically, clients I train will gain 18 pounds of muscle mass in 11 weeks without having to sacrifice a whole lot. So just by...
That's once a day training every...
That's once a day, 3 days out of 5 training. That's quite realistic to do. If they can throw in extra workouts where they train twice a day, we're looking at maybe 25 pounds of muscle mass for 11 weeks. But if you look at it, it's double the work just to gain an extra 7 pounds. I mean, your ability to gain lean body mass is somewhat limited. There's so much the body can handle in under natural conditions.
Someone with a 9-to-5 job, that's...
Even a guy with a 9-to-5 job, he can gain 18 pounds of muscle in 11 weeks. That's...
Training
once a day. Once a day, 3 days out of 5. Yes, it is possible. But like I said, with full-time athletes, increasing the total volume from 1 to 2 workouts a day, it only makes a difference usually about 7 pounds. Sometimes when the athlete really has a hard time gaining weight, it's because the intestinal lining is unhealthy. So putting them on a gut rebuilding protocol could be the deciding factor between gaining muscle or not. So there's ways we can measure that through lab tests, one being what we call intestinal permeability test, which where you drink a certain solution with 2 different types of sugars and you measure which sugars go in your urine, and that will tell us if the intestinal wall is actually healthy. And if it's not, we just put them on a gut rebuilding program, which involves a bunch of different botanicals and the consumptions of 80 grams of glutamine a day for 18 days. But in 18 days, that intestinal lining is all sealed up and it allows the person to gain body weight. I found that to be one of the limiting factors often.
You mentioned the HCL test before. Mm-hmm. You said 158 out of 160. Would the GI be the same sort of ratio? That many people are compromised in their gut?
No, I don't think that the intestinal lining is as compromised as the stomach acid production. In my experience, the people are more likely to have a compromised intestinal lining are people who have taken a lot of stimulants. So I've seen, for example, hockey players who take Ephedra sandwiches before games. Well, they're more likely to have poor intestinal lining. Or players who have used a lot of anti-inflammatory agents. So what you will find, for example, is that people who used to take Vioxx and Celebrex before they were taken off the market used to have really compromised intestinal lining. Another way that you can detect poor intestinal permeability is actually people who have a lot of food sensitivities. If you run a food allergy panel, they tend to be allergic to over 80 foods. That's usually a sign of a poor intestinal lining. The good news is it takes only between 18 to 21 days to fix a dysfunctional intestinal lining, while a stomach lining could take up to 2 years.
We haven't really touched on any foods in particular you would use. What kind of diet would you recommend?
The type of diet I actually recommend for gaining weight is the same as the fat loss one. I use a paleo diet. So, you know, if someone is looking for recipes, they could go to paleodiet.com and buy the book. Because, again, our genes are designed to put on muscle and lose fat. So the same foods that you would use to get lean are the same foods to put lean body mass on. The difference between the two populations is one of the training protocol is very different. The aim is to synthesize protein. When I go to the Dominican Republic, my body composition always improves because it's very easy over there to follow a paleo diet because there's a very fresh supply of locally grown fruits and vegetables, and the quality of the meat is much better than in America. So, for example, you know, over there, I will tend to eat a lot of salmon, freshly grown avocados, and so on. And it's not uncommon for me to shoot my body weight up 5 to 7 pounds in 1 week just by switching
to better food.
Better food.
Is there any foods in particular you prefer when you're trying to gain mass? You've said it before, you know, turkey versus lobster, there's more in one than the other.
Yeah, you'll find that there are such things as calorie-dense foods, and those charts are easily available. So, for example, nuts are very good food as far as calorie-dense versus spinach. So for a kid that needs to put a weight on, nuts is a great food, but it doesn't mean that people in a fat loss program should avoid them altogether as well. But
just
it's a matter of proportions.
We've also talked about portion size. A lot of people actually don't know what 50 grams of protein is.
Well, it's fairly easy to find charts and books that will tell you what 50 grams of protein is. But if you look at eggs, that would be 7 large eggs. So if a kid tells me, oh, I eat a lot, I say, well, how many eggs do you eat for breakfast? 2. Well, you're not going to put muscle on 2 eggs for breakfast. You'll need to eat 7 to put some weight on. So that's why I'm saying a lot of kids don't know what a lot of food is.
For meat-wise, so you've said 7 eggs. How much of a steak is 50 grams of protein?
Well, the basic rule for solid protein, when you look at meat, fish, and poultry, is 22% of the weight in grams pre-cooked is protein. So if you want to get 50 grams of dietary protein from a steak, you're looking to at least about a 250 gram steak. So that's 1/2 pound, okay, just to get 50 grams.
Okay, that's a lot. you've also mentioned that sleep is very important for putting on size. Can you just elaborate on that?
When kids want to gain muscle mass, it's very important that the sleep quality and quantity be optimized. They should sleep at least 8 hours per night, but I'm a strong believer in napping. Napping helps with growth. So particularly teenagers should use naps when they're trying to put on muscle mass, but the nap should not be longer than 2 hours for sure.
Does the time of, you're saying 8 hours, so if they go to bed at 1 o'clock in the morning and wake up at 9 o'clock in the morning, is that the same as going to bed at 10 o'clock and waking up at 6?
Well, there's something really odd about teenagers is that they only start to make melatonin around midnight. A lot of parents get upset that their teenagers don't go to bed and they'll say, you know, you got school tomorrow, blah, blah, blah. So some more enlightened school boards in the U.S. have said, well, naturally the body, when it goes through puberty, they tend to go to bed later. So they've said, well, let's start classes at 10 in the morning so we don't have to force kids out of bed. And actually, school boards have chosen to allow kids to come in later but finish later, actually have less problems with discipline, grades, and so on. So, you know, when my own kids go through teenagehood, I let them sleep in the morning and go to bed late because it's a natural thing. Where you're looking more like a young adult, let's say 21 years old, and he's trying to put on weight, I would say if they've gone through that phase where they start making melatonin a bit earlier now, then they should go to bed actually before midnight as much as possible.
Much before, or just before midnight is good enough?
Well, actually, the earlier you could go to bed, the better it is, you know. But we're talking about two different populations. So, you know, if you have, let's say, a hockey player who needs to put on weight and he's 26 years old, well, if he can get into the habit of going to bed early and wake up early, I find that this is more anabolic than, you know, the other types of lifestyle. One of the things that helps people gain weight is actually what I call the yin stack, which is three supplements that they take in the early evening to calm down the nervous system, because a lot of people are way too wired at night. So I tell them to take phosphatidylcholine in a dosage of 3 grams. Alternatively, they could take phosphatidylserine at 800 milligrams. And then they have to take in magnesium. And I would say one of the most common limiting factors in putting muscle mass on is actually total magnesium content. People who can't gain muscle, unless they take a gram of magnesium a day in spread out dosage, they'll never gain weight.
How spread out? I know you mentioned before that magnesium is good before bedtime, but like...
I'd like to take a gram of magnesium spread out over 3 feedings after 4 o'clock, because magnesium, you got to remember, is a calming agent. Also, I like to take taurine in the evening because taurine is an inhibitory amino acid. It always makes me laugh when I see it as being one of the ingredients in Red Bull, because it's actually does the opposite of what Red Bull is supposed to intend to do. So it's a GABA inducing amino acid. So I prefer to use taurine in the evening at a dose of 3 grams, again in spread dosage, and that will calm down the client so they can have a longer and deeper sleep.
With the magnesium, any brand will do, any make?
I've made my own magnesium for the reason being that different magnesiums target different tissues. So I call it Ubelmag, you know, in a sense it's a superior magnesium, because magnesium taurate, for example, helps calm down the system, but it doesn't do the same things as, let's say, magnesium orotate would, which lowers cortisol, which helps you gain mass, because the lower your cortisol levels are, the better you will put on muscle mass. So for gaining muscle mass, I find that, you know, as long as you have a chelate form of magnesium, you will gain better. But you will not put on muscle mass, let's say, with an inferior form of magnesium, like magnesium oxide.
Okay, you said there cortisol can impact it. Is there other lifestyle habits that people can adhere to lower cortisol?
Yes. The lower you can keep your cortisol throughout the day, the more you'll gain muscle mass. one thing I like to say to people is keep your cortisol for workouts, and that's it. The more cortisol you have while you train, the more energy you have, so the more you could impose demands that will, you know, favor protein synthesis. And keep your insulin for post-workout, and the rest of the day try to keep those two hormones as low as possible. So things like meditation, breathing exercise, Qigong, Tai Chi, they tend to lower cortisol. And there's a lot of research to back this up. So stretching, for example, will lower cortisol. So if you want to put on weight, a good thing to do at night is actually to
stretch.
And then to maybe listen to very calming music. But if you're trying to put on
AC/DC
before you go to bed and watch The Terminator, you know, it's going to be hard to calm down your nervous system. So one thing that I know for sure, if you want to put on lean body mass, you got to calm down your evenings as much as you can.
With another thing, with cortisol levels are highest in the morning. Does that mean the morning time is the best time to train?
If you want to put on muscle mass, for sure you should train in the morning. If you're going to train twice a day, you should train 3 hours after you've woken up and 11 hours after you've woken up. So if you wake up at 7 in the morning, you should train at 10 and at 6 o'clock at night. Actually, depending on the research, the window for training in the morning is 3 to 4 hours post waking up. So some people argue it's 10, some people argue it's 11 if you're waking up at 7, but I don't think it makes that much a difference. So if you want to
gain mass, train in the morning.
Yes, for sure.
For those people who train on their way to work, they get up out of bed, have a shake, get to the gym, is it going to impact on it, but other factors will help them or limit them?
Well, there's a difference between optimal and reality. I mean, if for some reason your lifestyle only allows you to train on your way to work, so be it. But if there's a way you can manipulate that, for example, you do a deal with your boss where you come in a bit earlier and you have a longer lunch, and then you could train at 11 in the morning and come back at 1, let's say, then that's great. You know, so you know, when there's a will, there's a way, so you could set it up.
Is there any bodybuilding myths in particular that stick out that are just useless?
Well, on the internet, everybody's an expert, but you got to realize that there's a difference between gaining muscle mass and gaining fat. One of the things that teenagers are told over and over on the internet is like, don't drink anything unless it has calories. So the kid drinks Gatorade, Pop, and a bunch of things, which actually, all they do, they accelerate aging and they compromise insulin sensitivity. You want to become insulin sensitive, not insulin resistant. Another thing that I hear a lot is, eat a lot of candy, you need a lot of calories. No, I don't think so, because it slows down your muscle mass gains. People don't realize that sugar is actually a castration agent, because it does lower your androgens. So the more you can stay away from sugar, the more virile you'll be, and the more testosterone you make. And you got to realize, anytime you eat a lot of sugar, there's usually a response from the adrenal glands 2.5 hours later after you've eaten sugar that increases cortisol. And cortisol is a catabolic hormone, makes you gain fat on the abdomen and lose muscle mass. The other reason when I am against sugar is sugar is immunosuppressive. It's been shown that if you eat high sugar food or drink, your immune system is depressed for 5 hours. Here's an interesting story about sugar and muscle building, is that muscle building is correlated to how strong your immune system is. So the stronger immune system you have, the more muscle mass you put on. One of the things I use as a supplement for gaining mass for kids who have what, you know, so-called ART gainers, is actually a type of blood protein, which is very strong immune enhancing. And if the kid comes to me and says, you know, I just can't gain weight, that's the first supplement I give them. And that blood protein favors protein synthesis rather rapidly. And that blood protein is very good actually for people who have food allergies or have asthma. I have a lot of patients who've had asthma taking the blood proteins and the asthma is gone.
What's that blood protein?
The brand is called Zymogen. I don't make it, but I buy it from them, and it's a very, very good product. So does colostrum. Colostrum, you know, some people say it's bad, some people say it's good. In my experience, based on research and my own experience, a good colostrum product is immune enhancing. It's been shown to increase IGF-1, and it's quite anabolic. And there's a lot of brands that make good colostrum.
How much and when do you take it?
I find when people have a poor immune system, you know, and they always have colds and infections and runny noses and they can't put size on, I make them use either colostrum or blood protein first thing in the morning, 30 grams. Because very few people know that the first 30 grams of protein you consume in a day actually goes towards the immune system. That's the preferential pathway. So that's why vegetarians are not particularly muscular, because their protein intake is so low.
Or vital.
And that's why you see a lot of vegetarians, they always complain about colds and flus, because they just don't have enough protein. Okay.
A lot of bodybuilders would recommend stuff like eating porridge for breakfast, and they'd have their rice and skinless chicken throughout the day, and that's pretty much all they eat.
The problem that kids get is they get dietary advice from guys who take dosages of anabolic steroids that look like a social security number. So if they were to try to put on muscle without...
Drug-free,
nothing would happen, okay? And because they take so many androgens, they're more insulin sensitive. But the average listener out there will do far better putting in lean body mass if they follow a paleo type of diet than try to follow a typical bodybuilding diet. Also, very few people know that oats is one of the most common allergens. So people eat oats and then they feel crappy after breakfast. So then they say, okay, I'm going to take some ephedra, some coffee to wake up to go to the gym. So then more cortisol. Sure, they got energy once they get to the gym, but they've got to fight off that cortisol for hours after. So another thing that makes me laugh all the time is that egg whites to gain weight. That's a waste of time, okay? If you're going to eat eggs, you got to eat whole eggs, and they got to be cooked properly. So poached or soft-boiled. But if you scramble eggs, for example, you oxidize the cholesterol in them. So it's basically you're putting an extra load on your body.
With the immune system, is there anything else you would do to support the immune system?
If you look at most ART gainers, what they have in common, they got a poor immune system. So for that, I like to use glutamine every meal to support the immune system, because anytime someone has an infection, glutamine levels drop in the bloodstream. Actually, the Canadian Army has done a lot of research on immune suppression through exercise. And what they have found is if you take people and you put them in very stressful environments, like marriage. I'm just kidding. But I mean, if you put them in a stressful environment like being in the Arctic Circle and doing military maneuvers, you will find that within just a matter of days, their immune system drops dramatically. Now, what they've done is that they've given certain soldiers high dosages of glutamine and some soldiers none, or a placebo, and you found that the people who were taking a lot of glutamine could tolerate cold and exercise and stress far better. I think for kids who are trying to gain weight, also any sort of botanical that is known to fight stress, like ashwagandha, holy basil, rhodiola rosea, all... provided they come from a good source, they will help you put on muscle because they lower your stress level. The more you can mitigate cortisol response, the more testosterone you will have. A lot of kids are being sold, you need to take this herb that increases testosterone. Well, first of all, from my experience, herbs that are known to increase testosterone only work for about 8 days. Unless you rotate them often, they're not going to work. But I found that herbs that lower cortisol tend to work longer, and by lowering cortisol, automatically you will have higher testosterone.
Does mental attitude come into it at all?
Yes, dramatically, because you know a lot of people say, well, I'm a hard gainer. Well, if you say you're a hard gainer, you are a hard gainer. And if you say you're an easy gainer, you'll gain easily. So attitude is paramount in towards putting muscle mass. One thing that I find in kids who can't gain weight is they are basically OCD'd about their weight gain. They weigh themselves every 15 minutes. Well, muscle doesn't build that fast, okay? So I would tell kids who want to put on weight should only weigh themselves once a week, let's say after weekends, but always at the same time to allow the weight to be gained.
Charles, for practical reasons, sometimes people find it easier to have liquid meals. Is there a ratio you would give, like 4 solid versus 2 liquid?
Well, there are instances where solid meals are not as practical. For example, if you have a guy, he's on a national judo team, and the only job he can get is being a bouncer on weekends. Well, I doubt his boss is going to allow him to take 30 minutes off to go cook a steak and eat some vegetables. So what do you recommend to a guy like that? Well, you could actually prepare a shake, but the type of shake should be different. What he could have is the shake should contain a mixture of casein and whey. Because if it's just straight whey, in some people, straight whey is too insulinogenic. So the casein tends to slow down the insulin response. And there are better brands out there that actually include omega-3s in the protein. So an omega-3-rich casein whey protein mix would be indicated. Another thing that people don't think about is that on the internet, you can find a lot of homemade protein bars that you can make. To tell you the truth, I've never seen a really good commercial brand protein bar, because if it's healthy for you, it has a poor shelf life. But it doesn't forbid you as a client, you know, to make on the weekends a stack of protein bars at home and bring those to work. And then those are very convenient. You could carry them on you and they don't take a lot of space. And there's a lot of good recipes for homemade ones. There's such things as protein pancakes, which actually are low carb. You could, or protein flapjacks, whatever you want to call them. You can make those, carry them in the Tupperware, and then, you know, snack on those. So there's a lot of protein, high protein snacks.
So it's just people have to be a bit more inventive, and if instead of just saying, oh, well, I can't cook a steak, then I'll have to have a shake.
Yes. So, but even if you're going to have a shake, I would still have, let's say, one of those homemade protein bars, because the solid food will slow down the insulin response.
So the casein mixture you're talking about, that's the only time you'd have that. You wouldn't have that for a post-workout shake. You'd only have that as a snack.
I used to be anti-casein post-workout, actually, but in a very recent past, we're talking the last 3 months, there are some papers published that say that casein may actually be a better protein and whey post-workout. So I'm not utterly convinced, but at least I'm open-minded to the fact that, you know, maybe it is also a good post-workout.
Even with the omega-3s?
Yes. Another thing that I think is very important to gain weight, muscle weight, and burn fat, is that people should carry on them fish oil capsules. I think it's very critical that every feeding you have extra omega-3s. So, for example, if you're the type of person that has to drink a shake on the way to your workout, because that's the only thing that you could do, you should take in a few fish oil capsules with it to slow down the insulin response.
Charles, could you give us an example of one of these homemade protein bars?
Well, for example, John Berardi, who's a colleague of mine, who's a very good nutritionist, has an entire book on bodybuilding recipes. Dave Draper, who's a famous bodybuilder, has a website, davedraper.com, which gives out protein recipes. Actually, if you just Google protein recipes, you will find countless scores. But there's some, for example, made with mixture of whey, casein, pecan nuts, and macadamia nuts, and it's very simple to cook it. You know, someone with an IQ of 5 and take 6 to bark could cook those things. I mean, it's really simple.
Any guidelines for it? Like, you'll see some of these recipes. Is there anything to avoid in them?
Well, some of them, which I'm not too keen to recommend, artificial sweeteners. I'd rather use a very small amount of, let's say, honey as a sweetener than to use artificial sweeteners, because if you do look in the literature, there's plenty of evidence that show that artificial sweeteners have all sorts of impacts on brain function, but we're talking about negative impacts. However, it depends on the genotype. Some people can do well with those artificial sweeteners, but unless you've conducted a genomic profile, I wouldn't really risk it. But it's possible to make tasty ones. Another thing is that the healthier you eat, you'll find your taste buds don't crave a sweet taste anymore. And things like nuts and whey protein together will actually taste sweet once you've gotten rid of the sugar habit. The problem is that nowadays we're over sugar-sized and we always look for that taste. But if you look at a caveman, the only time he had access to simple sugars if he stumbled in a beehive, and that was like not every day. So our bodies are not made to handle large amounts of processed sugar at once.
Regarding that issue, what way would you work a cheat meal into someone who's trying to gain weight? Would you have like a massive calorie day and they can just eat what they want?
One thing I've found to be useful with athletes who need to gain weight, particularly for sports like football, American football, is to have a 50% extra calorie day. I'm talking about a seriously underweight individual, a guy, let's say, that's 6'3", 140, you know. But if you're 5'10", 296, and 4% body fat, I don't think you really need that anymore. But we're talking here about mostly teenagers. I would say every fifth day of your training cycle, boost up the calories to 50. In those days, I would allow some simple sugars, but as long as they're integrated with also high protein.
An example?
For example, ice cream is very high caloric dense. You know, for a kid to gain weight, if he takes ice cream every 5 days, you know, at a meal to increase his calories, I don't think it does that much damage health-wise. But if he makes ice cream 4 meals a day, yes, it can create a problem. So that's a way to increase calories. Things like yams are caloric rich, rice. So on the days that he's resting, you could have those types of carbohydrates, which are more like tuberous vegetables and potatoes and so on, just to increase the calories. But whether it's fat loss or muscle gain, I'm a true believer that if you have gorging periods, you do actually do better.
You've said there that they should do it on non-training days. Some people believe that if you're going to do a gorging day, to make sure you train so that you don't turn those extra calories into body fat.
In my experience, no. For example, I've said many times I prefer thin-skinned fruits because they're higher in antioxidants. For example, blueberries are a great source of multiple sources of antioxidants. But on a cheat day, I would eat bananas or grapes, you know, which are calorie dense fruits, figs, dates. Those are better cheating choices on those high calorie days. I find that will help a kid gain weight.
So you're still getting a lot of nutrition.
Still getting a lot of nutrition without really compromising.
So instead of eating brownies and...
Correct. Instead of eating, you know, three musketeer bars and stuff like that, you tend to eat better cheating choices.
We've covered a lot of information here. For someone, just to break it down, okay, so you'd wake up in the morning, and what way are you going to eat for the rest of the day?
Okay, for example, a kid comes to see me and he's underweight. Say, okay, wake up, you have 2 buffalo patties, 5 eggs, okay? A cup of almonds, which is nutrient dense, some liquid to slow it down, some fish oil. I really like to have, this is a good rule of thumb, you should at least have 2 solid meals before you train. So people say, well, I only have time for one. Well, get up earlier and shut up. So you have another meal. So the next meal may be, let's say, salmon, some berries. You go to the gym, you train. You have your post-workout shake. So you're already at 3 meals, okay? And, of course, you've taken branching amino acids during that workout.
So your calories are up already.
Your calories are quite up. An hour after you finish training, depending on how lean the person is, then it would be a type of meat, fish, poultry, or seafood. So let's say the guy has scallops, some vegetables, and then if he's underweight, I would have rice. Rice is one of my favorite carbohydrates.
Any particular rice?
The more closer it is to nature, like brown rice, the better it is, okay, because it's digested slower. Then in the evening meal, you may have, let's say, a broiled steak, a salad, and as a source of carbohydrate, then I would use yams, okay? And that builds up the calories. And then in the evening, you may have a snack of nuts and dry fruit, which brings up the calories, and a glass of protein. But if he's going to have a protein shake, I still prefer to have some solid food with it. If he's not allergic to dairy, you know, it's part of his something he tolerates well, you could have a snack, for example, of cottage cheese with blended in protein powder that also increases his protein intake. And then another good weight-gaining food is actually rice pudding, in which you add whey protein to jack up the protein content.
So you could use that as a snack as well at some stage?
Correct. You know, we're talking about somebody that's underweight.
Regardless of how much weight you want to put on, you still have to plan your day.
Yes, I think the main reason why people do not gain weight is they're not planning properly. There's a very good strength coach out there called Bill Starr, and he's probably responsible for the proper education of many strength coaches. And one of the things I learned from him years ago is that consistency in meal planning is the most important factor for gaining weight. Another thing that actually helps gain weight, and very few people know that, is actually green drinks. In other words, they're basically vegetable concentrates that you drink. And if kids start drinking those instead of water at meals, they gain weight faster. The reason why is that it's actually a very biologically absorbable source of minerals. But there's research that just came out in July that showed that green drinks actually turn on the genes from protein synthesis. I've got a product called Paleo Greens, and we've been selling lots of it just because of that fact once it came out in the research. But one thing that is been shown is nowadays, because we have 100 times more stress than before, our acid alkaline balance is quite upset. And the more cortisol you produce, the more acidic you become. And green drinks actually alkalize you. And the theory behind green drinks is because they alkalize you, they mitigate the effects of cortisol, therefore put you into an anabolic state. So actually, I would say one of the best weight gain supplements are green drinks. So if the kid for breakfast has, let's say, a broiled steak and 5 eggs, he could wash it down with a green drink. So anytime he has a solid meal, to take a green drink, and effectively, it works very well.
So for instance, a lot of people say you should drink, say, 3 liters of water a day. If he did mix the green drinks in with his 3 liters of water, his weight gain would be easier and quicker.
Yeah, and also it mitigates lactic acid buildup during training. So if you actually drank a green drink while you train, you could actually do more reps as you train.
Could you mix it with the ice?
No, that would be the equivalent of a very untasteful swamp water. But the one thing you could do, though, is take branched-chain amino acids in a capsule form and wash it down with a green drink as you train.
How would you work a branched-chain amino acid in with the green drinks?
I would not mix a powder of amino acids, branched-chain amino acids, in a green drink. The problem is leucine floats, and it has quite a nasty taste. What I'd rather use is branched-chain amino acid capsules, not tablets, because capsules digest faster, and use a green drink and go through 40 capsules while down in the green drink.
For better results.
For much better results. And also what you find is that green drinks obviously is a rich source of chlorophyll, but chlorophyll has been shown to change the pH in the GI tract, particularly in the intestines, which tends to favor better absorption of nutrients.
Okay, Charles, that's a lot more information as well to use. Thanks very much.
More than welcome.
So that's it for this Poliquin podcast. Ask the Coach with Coach Charles Poliquin is an exclusive series of conversations. It is for the sole purpose of its audience. Any rebroadcast or reproduction of this is strictly prohibited. It is for entertainment purposes only, and it is not a substitute for professional medical or health advice, examination, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health professional before starting any new treatment, making any changes to existing treatments, or altering in any way your current exercise or diet regime. Thank you for joining us on Ask the Coach. Until next time, be healthy, lean, and strong.